Hello and welcome to Torah Imecha Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Alana Glatt, and today we will be studying Sefer Shmuel Aleph Perek Vav, Chapter 6. First, a quick recap of yesterday's Perek, Perek Hey. Yesterday, we watched as the Aron of Hashem, which unfortunately was in Plishti captivity after the Plishti's defeat of Bnei Israel, was brought to the city of Ashdod and was placed in the temple of their god Dagon. But we saw that instead of demonstrating Plishti victory, the opposite happened. Dagon fell before the Aron, first collapsing, prostrating itself before the Aron of Hashem. And then the next day, his head and hands were severed, leaving only the fish-like body of the idol intact. Soon after, terrible plague struck the Plishtim, painful hemorrhoid-like afflictions, and according to many Mefarshim, a devastating plague of mice that destroyed their crops and brought terrible suffering to all that crossed its path. The Plishtim tried moving the Aron from city to city, from Ashdod to Gat to Ekron, but everywhere it went, the plague followed them. Finally, after 7 months of devastation, they realized that they could no longer keep the Aron. That brings us to today's Perek, Perek Vav, Chapter 6. Pasuk Aleph opens up by telling us that the Aron remains in the fields of the Plishtim for 7 long months. It's important to note that during these 7 months, Hashem was extremely disappointed with the Bnei Israel for not trying their utmost to ransom back the Aron of Hashem, or to try in any way to convince the Plishtim to give the Aron back. This complacency on the part of Bnei Israel gave the wrong impression to the Plishtim that the Jews didn't really care anymore about their holy Aron. The Medrash notes that Hashem himself stepped in. Since Bnei Israel are not taking care to rescue the Aron, I will have to return it myself. I will now see how that will happen as our parak unfolds. Pasuk Bet. Vayikri'u plishtim lakoanim velakosmim limor, ma na'ase la'aron Hashem, hodi'unu b'men ishlechanu limkomo. Finally, the plishtim gathered their priests and their astrologers, and they asked the obvious question. What should we do with the Aron of the God of Israel? The Malbim notes here that they turned specifically to the astrologers and the priests this time, and not the leaders, because they recognized that this plague was metaphysical and possibly spiritual in nature, even though they still weren't 100% certain. And so these were the men to help with this kind of scenario. Interestingly, Pasuk Gimel, the priests do not directly say, send it back. Instead, they say to the people, if you do decide to send it back, then don't send it back empty. Send it with a guilt offering. Then you'll be healed and you'll realize why his hands would not turn away from against you. Again, they're not telling them to send it back, but they're saying, if you do decide to do that, then just don't send it back empty. So Pasuk Dalet tells us that what did the priests recommend doing? They recommended sending it with the following guilt offerings along with the Aron. 5 golden hemorrhoid-like figures and 5 golden mice. Why 5? Because, like we learned yesterday's Perek, there were 5 Plishti rulers who represented the 5 major cities of the Plishtim, which were Ashdod, Gaza, Ashkelon, Gat, and Ekron. These cities and their leaders had all been struck by the same plague. According to the explanation brought by the Mefarshim, as we learned yesterday, the golden hemorrhoids represented the terrible disease that afflicted them, and the golden mice represented either part 2 of that same disease or the plague of mice that destroyed their land and their crops. Pasuk Vav, the Plishti priest warned them, just do not harden your hearts like the Egyptians did. They still remember the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim and how Paro had stubbornly resisted Hashem's will, bringing disaster upon those people. Yet even with all of this knowledge, the Plishtim were still hesitant to admit 100% that this was truly the hands of Hashem. So they designed a test. What was the test? Psukim Zayin through Tet, verses 7 to 9 tell us precisely what this test was. They would take 2 nursing cows that had never been used for work before, and they should attach to them a wagon. On the wagon, they would place the Aron together with the special golden offerings that they had prepared. Then they would lock the cow's calves back at home. Naturally, a nursing mother, a mother cow, should run straight back to her calves. That's pure instinct. So if the cows turned around to their babies, the Plishtim could say that the plague was just coincidence. It's just natural, just happened to have happened. Has nothing to do with the hands of their God. But if the cows went straight towards Beit Shemesh, towards the land of Israel, ignoring their calves, it would then prove to them, once and for all, that the God of Israel was behind everything all along. And so comes Pasuk Yud. The people do just as they were suggested, and the test was carried out. The Aron was placed on the wagon with the golden offerings beside it, and the cows were sent on their way, with their calves locked up back at home. Pasuk Yudvet tells us something remarkable. Vayisharna haparot baderach, al derach Beit Shemesh, b'mesila achar halchu, haloch v'ga'o, v'lo saru yamin u'smol, v'sarnei plishtim hochim achareihem, ad gvul Beit Shemesh. The cows set out on the direct road, on the road to Beit Shemesh. On a single road did they go, lowing as they went, and they did not veer right or left. And the Plishti princes followed the wagon the entire way, watching carefully to see what would happen. According to Rashi, Vayisharna comes from the word yashar, straight. The cows went straight along the road towards Beit Shemesh. They did not turn right or left. But he also quotes the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, which teaches something even deeper and so beautiful about this very word. Vayisharna can also be understood from the word shira, song. The cows were not merely walking straight. They were singing praise to Hashem with every single step that they took. Even though what they were doing was completely unnatural for them, it's not normal for cows to walk away from their nursing calves. Yet their deeper instinct, the desire to fulfill the will of Hashem, that's what kicked in. And they even sang along the journey with recognition that they were able to fulfill Hashem's will. Pasuk Yud Gimel. The wagon eventually arrives at Beit Shemesh, a city we're all pretty familiar with today, which was located near the border between the territory of Israel and the Plishtim. At that moment, the Pesukim tell us that the people of Beit Shemesh happened to be out in their fields harvesting their wheat at the time. And when they look up and they see the Aron returning, they were overjoyed. They were so excited. Yadalid. And the wagon stopped in the field of a man named Yehoshua of Beit Shemesh, where there was a big rock. The people chopped up the wood of the wagon, and they offered up the cows as an offering to Hashem. Just a quick note, that this was permissible now. Once the Mishkan of Shiloh was destroyed, it was allowed to bring karbanot outside of the Mishkan. Just something important to keep in mind. Pasuk Tedvav. The Levium came forward, and they properly lifted down the Aron, and the people of Beit Shemesh offered elevation offerings and slaughtered feast offerings on that day to Hashem. Tet Zion. Meanwhile, the Plishti governors, who had been watching the scene from a distance the entire time, they looked up, and once they saw that the Aron was received, they returned home. The parak, however, does not end on a joyful note at all, as we might expect based on the psukim that we've read so far. Soon after the Aron arrived, and once the Plishti leaders left, a terrible tragedy occurred. Hashem purposely waited until the Plishti leaders were far, far away, so as not to allow them to see the upcoming tragedy, or to think in any way, Hashem kills the Jewish people just as he kills us. Chas v'shalom. This was a completely separate incident. Pasuk Yud-Tet tells us, unfortunately, Vayach v'anshei Beit Shemesh ki ra'u be'aron Hashem. Vayach ba'am shivim ish, chamishim elef ish, vayitablu ha'am ki hika Hashem ba'am makah gedola. And Hashem smote of the men of Beit Shemesh because they peered into the Ark of Hashem. He struck them, 70 men, 50,000 men. The people mourned because Hashem had smitten the people with a great blow. What exactly happened here that was so bad and was deserving of such a grave punishment? And how many people were struck? Was it 70? Was it 50,000? What exactly is going on here? The Mefarshim all work overtime to try and thread the strands together for us. According to the Malbim, some of the people gazed at the Aron improperly, without showing it the proper reverence and respect that it deserved. The Medrash actually describes how the Aron had been returned with all of its coverings. The Aron Kodesh was always covered with special coverings out of honor for the holy holiness that was represented by the Aron itself. And what happens here, according to the Medrash, the Plishtim returns it with the proper coverings, but as soon as it entered Beit Shemesh, the strongest winds came and blew the coverings off. And at that moment, the Medrash tells us that some people, instead of immediately rushing to cover the Aron again, to give it the proper respect that it deserved, some people took that moment to stare at the Aron that they had never seen before, something that was considered extremely disrespectful. According to the Radak, they actually opened up the Aron and looked at what was inside of it. That, he says, is why the Pasuk says they looked into the Aron Be'aron, rather than simply saying that they looked at the Aron. According to the Ralbag, they continued working and didn't show the proper and appropriate honor when the Aron had arrived. Instead of stopping everything and demonstrating awe and reverence for this incredible moment that they were experiencing, some people unfortunately just treated the moment too casually. The Medrash elaborates that Hashem was extremely disappointed with their overall attitude towards the Aron during the entire time that it was in captivity. Their passive approach to the Aron's return only amplifies the casual acceptance that they had of it being taken captive all that time in the first place. If they had lost a valuable jewel, wouldn't they have spent 7 long months looking for it? And in the very least, they would be davening for it to return at all moments, anxiously awaiting that moment, preparing themselves for how to best act when they do somehow manage to retrieve it. Their laissez-faire attitude at this very joyous moment was a deep indicator of their lack of concern that they felt about the Aron and its honor all throughout. Hashem therefore struck them with a terrible plague. 70 elders and 50,000 people died. How do we understand this number? Targum Yonasan explains it literally. He says that 70 elders and 50,000 common people unfortunately died that day. Rashi explains it to mean that it was 70 people who were each as important as 50,000. Or he says it was 50,000 men, each of whom was equal to the 70 of the Sanhedrin. And these were incredibly chashuv, important people, great people who were killed for not treating the Aron properly, according to the different answers that we just discussed. After this whole encounter, the Psukim tell us that the people of Beit Shemesh cry out, "Who can stand before the Hashem, this holy God? To whom among us can this Aron ascend?" Overwhelmed by the intense responsibility that keeping the Aron carries, they now look for a new home where the Aron could reside, and the parak ends off that they sent it to Kiryat Ya'arim. Just to end off with an interesting fun fact from today's parak. According to the Gemara in Yoma 52b, right before the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, there was a Jewish king whose name was Yoshiyahu, and he actually buried the Aron along with other important objects so that they would be kept safe and saved for the future even after the Beit HaMikdash itself was destroyed. And you know what was one of those items that was listed as an item that he buried along with the Aron? Along with, just to note, a special jar of man that was kept in a jar from the days of Moshe Rabbeinu himself, and it was in the Beit HaMikdash all of this time, and along with Aron HaKohen, his special staff that sprouted almonds and blossoms and it always stayed fresh, in order to remind the Bnei Israel that it was only Shevet Levi, the tribe of Levi, who was chosen to work in the Mishkan, along with those holy items, another item that was kept all of this time was a box which contains within it, you guessed it, the golden gifts that the Plishtim had sent to the Bnei Israel in our very Perek. Why was that so important to keep? You know why it was so important to keep? Because just like we learned today, it reminded the Jewish people of the miraculous story of exactly what we saw, of the special and supernatural return of the Aron to the Jewish people. And it reminded them just how powerful and incredible Hashem truly is. With that, we conclude our learning for today. I wish everyone a lovely and beautiful rest of your day. Today's parak is dedicated to the safety and peace of Am Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael. May the words of Nach uplift us and give us strength during these challenging times.